Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. With me, as always, is Kyle. Eric, sadly, he's not with us, Kyle. He's just not with us.
He's not dead, alive, but not with us.
Right, yeah. No. I mean...
For those who maybe missed the off-season tournament and stuff this year, Eric, the original third member of our trio from the first iteration of the Skodcast way back when, he wants to start joining us for some post-game stuff like this, but... his schedule's a little hectic still, so he may eventually join us. He may not. Who cares?
So there was some real Bears football.
This is our first Bears post game cast of the season. Our first Bears victory cast of the season. It was certainly it wasn't the cleanest win that we all wanted to see.
It was a very Bears victory.
Yeah. Which normally wouldn't be that disappointing, I guess, other than that you were sort of hoping this is the year in which we would start to win in a non-Bears fashion somewhat. But, so this is only our eighth victory cast that we've ever gotten to do since we started the podcast. So don't want to understate that. And there's a lot of good stuff in that game to discuss. As usual, it was mostly on one side of the ball. But there is a lot of good stuff to discuss. We're going to discuss all that first, and we'll break down Caleb Williams. I don't know if Travis and I gone talked about this all day. And Travis, as you know, he is keeping his feet on the ground. He's refusing to let Caleb break down his icy walls until he has proven himself. I don't think
we've actually talked about this on the pod, but I think what we're doing here is I'm kind of taking a more game by game approach to Caleb, where I'm just going to say, this is a quarterback. This is what he did in this game. I'm not going to project anything. I'm not going to say, but with rookie quarterbacks, this is where they could go. That's kind of your field of expertise anyway,
Kyle. I think it's just kind of funny because with past Bears quarterbacks,
yes,
I've always been what I would describe myself as a pragmatic optimist, which is that I have when it comes to Bears quarterbacks, I will talk myself into them as long as I believe that it is within reason, and that scope of reason is always based off of I don't know if it's arrogant to me to say, I think I've done almost more research into the history of the development of quarterbacks in this league than just about anybody on the internet at this point.
You've put yourself through the ringer as far as that goes.
So like with Mitch Trubisky, I was not a huge fan of him as a prospect and I never bought in. But, you know, in his second year, I was like, after the Tampa Bay game, I was like, you know, I am willing to entertain that I might have been wrong. My condition was that in year three, which tends to be the make or break year, he needed to take a visible step forward or I was done. Year three came, he took a visible step backward. I was done. With Justin Fields, I even did a little more because I really still feel like, yes, as a second year quarterback, the situation that he put in was historically bad. It did lead to some asterisks, I felt like, in his development. But I still said, you know, that's all well and good as long as he takes the expected leap in year three. He did not do that. So I'm not going to, I didn't talk myself into him past the point that history and logic says you should. And that's where I'm at with Caleb Williams too. We're going to talk about this. Obviously, and this is just talking as a neutral observer of NFL football. Obviously there was nothing in Caleb Williams' one career start. And especially with the history of rookie debuts that should make any of you push any kind of panic button. At the same time, I understand Travis being like he is not here to walk on faith, my friends. He's here. Yeah. He is Missouri. He's saying, show me, and we'll get there. We'll break down Caleb in a bit. I do think, I won't say it wasn't as bad as it looked. But I will say that the way in which it was bad was less concerning to me than it looked in the broadcast view. So we'll get there in a little bit. That's our sneak preview of Caleb. I want to start with, we'll roll with the defense though. Let's start with the positives. First of all, on the defensive side of the ball on special teams. First of all, Roma Dunze, a little bit of a scary moment earlier today where they revealed he was getting an MRI. When you watch the video of the play in which he got hurt, it very hard not when you especially saw the still of the way in which his leg moved, twisted, It was very hard to believe that that wasn't a crippling injury, but we just recently got word the Bears believe it's a grade one sprain, which could be anywhere from he's lining up against Houston or we'll see him in 2 weeks. So not the end of the world there with Rome. That's big news for the Bears today. But yeah, rolling into the good stuff. Travis, where do you want to start on defense? Who was your, what was your, the first thing that really stood out to you? I have a guess on who you're going to say, but I'll let you say it.
We should probably first state that the Bears did win 24-17, only scored 2 points offensively. How that's possible, I don't know. That's a very Iowa Hawkeyes thing to have happen, and I specifically requested that this game not involve the Iowa Hawkeyes style of play at all, and yet I watched two fucking Iowa games this weekend. But yeah, I had a lot of fun watching the defense. I had some fun watching the offense. I think the obvious defensive MVP of this game is Daryl Taylor, the recent acquisition from Seattle, who was supposed to basically be a Band-Aid, sort of. Like, ah, we need a pass rush guy. We need just anybody. Like, we'll pick up some schlub. We trade, well, was it a fifth or a sixth round pick?
Sixth round pick for this guy.
We
know that Snap Ryan Poles one. Does not value sixth round picks. He will give them away. Yeah,
that is garbage. Snap one. I said, Kyle, who the hell is that?
You said,
I think that's the guy we got from Seattle, right? Taylor. And I was like, okay. And then every subsequent snap that Daryl Taylor was in, he wrecked their offensive line. He owned whatever tackle he was on. He made it to such a point. The Bears did kind of what we expected, right? On first and second down, they were running Billings and Dexter in the middle at the 1 and 3 technique specifically. They had Walker on the outside with Sweat. And then on third down and passing downs, they moved Walker inside, moved Dexter over to the 1 tech, and then it was Sweat and, in this case, Taylor on the outside. It only took 2 third downs for the Bears coaching staff to say, fuck it, keep him in. Daryl Taylor stays in the game. And we not only did not lose efficacy against the run, we appeared to gain efficacy against the run with Daryl Taylor being the primary edge on that side of the ball. So just what an amazing game from him. 2 sacks. He had a forced fumble. I just absolutely disruptive. Like, if the Bears have that in their defense, and I know it's probably not going to happen like every week, this is a weird game. This is a game that was suspiciously similar to that 49ers game we talked about last week, right? Just weird things happen in week one, right? Remember, Dom Robinson had 2 sacks in that game and then never did it again. So totally possible. There are tons of parallels with that game. But for one game, it's got to be Daryl Taylor, right?
Yeah, I want to say with Daryl Taylor, like, I think he's not going to do that every week. No one does. But
oh my God, can you imagine?
We have said all offseason, the thing the Bears need is just, it doesn't even need to be like a true, it doesn't need to be like a second Montez Sweat. They just needed their answer really to Mark Anderson back in 2006, or their answer to Bryce Huff. They really just needed that dude that you line up on the opposite edge in an obvious passing down. And this defense played to form outside of 2 drives. There were 2 drives where Brian Callahan used a lot of misdirection, did a little razzle dazzle, got the linebackers out of position. They got, like, I want to say like 60, maybe even 80% of their total rushing production on 2 drives. That's one where I wish I could find like what the Titans' overall rushing success rate was versus their total yardage, because I would bet that their success rate was fairly low. Most of their runs went nowhere outside of those 2 drives. So they kept backing and they kept closing on those screens and all the quick stuff that Tennessee wanted to do. They kept them backed up behind the sticks the whole time. They got them into 2nd and 13, 3rd and 10, and then that's when they brought in the NASCAR defensive line. You know, you kick DeMarcus Walker inside, you put Daryl Taylor there at the other end. You have Montez Sweat, you have Jervon. Jervon drew double teams like he's supposed to. Montez Sweat draws attention. So you just need that one speed rusher on the other end that just pins his ears back and gets after it and takes advantage of advantageous one-on-one matchups. And if Daryl Taylor can be that guy, you know, we thought maybe Austin Booker could be that guy. I actually thought Booker, they had him in there on a couple snaps in the first quarter, and I didn't think he looked bad, but it was clear, like, he got a little bit of push, but it was clear the next series they put in Daryl Taylor, and Daryl Taylor was just so immediately, obviously giving J.C. Latham fits. with the jab and everything that he had, that they were just, I was actually, because one of my complaints with the Eberflus administration is, remember how stubbornly once upon a time they stuck to the Lucas Patrick, Tevin Jenkins rotation, or when they were constantly doing the thing where it was like one series for David Montgomery, one series for Khalil Herbert, one of my complaints is that not that they have, when they use these rotations, they don't really seem to, it doesn't seem to be merit based. It seems to be more just like, this was the plan. We're going to, this guy gets X snaps. I really was pleased that like they immediately were like, no, he's kicking Latham's ass. We're just going to ride that hot hand all the way through. I don't think it's a reflection on Austin Booker. You don't have to talk about him this week though, Travis. I'll admit you don't have to talk about Austin
Booker. He didn't do shit.
You don't have to acknowledge him. I don't think that was a reflection on Austin Booker. They said when they made the Daryl Taylor trade that they were going to play the hot hand at that other edge. And it was very clear early on, J.C. Latham had his hands full with Daryl Taylor. And we like J.C. Latham.
And lo and behold, yes, isn't it weird how you've played your whole career using the leverage on your right shoulder, right, with a guy coming at you, and all we have to do is put a dedicated speed rusher who's going around suddenly your bare left shoulder and who has one good jab move, and you're done. You don't know what to do. He's a rookie. He never plays left tackle, and you throw him to the wolves like that.
I thought Daryl Taylor was a nice surprise. Overall, I thought the defensive line, and granted, we talked about the right side, especially of the Titans offensive line, very weak. And that certainly played. I mean, Montez Sweat, if you asked him, I think he would say that Nicholas Petitfrere has the right last name, because Montez Sweat made it clear that he was little brother from the first snap. Jervon Dexter, you know, I wasn't really seeing a lot out of him on the first couple of drives, even into the second quarter. I was getting a little disappointed that the guy that had been hyped up so much in camp hadn't really shown up. But I think down the stretch, when he ended up with a 20% pass rush win rate in true pass rush situations, and he was a really noticeable in the third and fourth quarter. And I think that goes to how Jervon Dexter is probably going to win. He's still not... I do think his first step looks a little better than last year. He's still not a guy that you would say has an explosive first step yet, but he is also just the strongest man on the field. And you could see the impact of that as the game wore on. By the first, second quarter, not such a big deal. By the third quarter, by the fourth quarter, those Titans were tired, man. They were tired of having to push back Jervon Dexter on every snap. And he just started winning just by being the big boy. So Jervon Dexter, overall, I think Will Levis was pressured 37% of the time, which is like the fourth highest pressure rate this week. And we actually didn't see, and this might end up being a problem going forward, who knows. I would like to believe it was just because Flew saw early on that he could get home with four. We didn't see a whole lot of blitzes out of Flus, despite all the stuff that he did in preseason and supposedly in camp. It was a very impressive, one of the best, I mean, low bar here, probably the best showing for a defensive line yet in the Flus era in a single game.
For sure. Yeah.
But yeah, it looked good. And Billings, you know, we love Andrew Billings. I thought he was great. I thought he was the reason that the Titans run game for the most part. What success they did have was, you know, misdirection and running outside the tackles, because there wasn't nothing up the middle between Jervon and Billings right there. It wasn't happening. Montez Sweat, obviously one of the best defensive ends at setting the edge. Notably, the success the Titans had was outside the tackle. It was outside the tackle to the left. It was not to Montez Sweat's side of the field. The defensive line was about as good as we could have hoped for there. And then, of course, the secondary was every bit as advertised. Levis ended up with, 127
yards. Every quarterback this week just had such a bad week.
And we'll talk about that in the context of Caleb, too. But Will Levis specifically looked, you could tell he got, the boys got some Favre in him. You could tell by the end of the game he got very frustrated with just taking what the defense gives him, because the defense wasn't giving him shit. And we'll talk about this again in the context of one of my big things is I feel very much like defenses around the league have adjusted somewhat to these Shanahan offenses, and they all the layups are contested now. Those quick, you don't get those quick 6-7 yard throws that like Jared Goff used to feast on as a rookie before he learned how to become like a real pocket passer. The stuff that Nagy was doing to hide Mitch Trubisky in 2018, those layups aren't there anymore. They're contesting those. And so I thought Will Levis, you know, and for a while there, he was like, all right, just throw it away. Just take the 1 yard. A punt is okay. A punt is okay. And then you could tell by the third quarter, he got impatient and you could tell he was going to start forcing it a little bit. They got a couple picks in there. I could have had a couple more. The pick six that he threw to Tyreek was, and I say this as a man who watched a lot of Jay Cutler and a lot of Rex Grossman, one of the single dumbest interceptions I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. DeMarcus Walker was like actively chuckling, talking about that one. He was like, just take the sack, son. Just take the sack.
You just throw it a little further. It goes out of bounds there, Will. Yeah, like, oh my God. So one of the things that may have contributed early, you mentioned like, oh, there was motion and razzle dazzle. But the Titans' success early also came largely running the ball. The Bears came out with all three of their starting corners, and then they did not put them on the bench for the rest of the game, which essentially means they were in nickel personnel the entire game. Jack Sanborn played three snaps in this game. So we had four down linemen, we had two linebackers, and then five members of the secondary. Not necessarily the defense I might have run against the Titans. Definitely something I expect the Bears to do against CJ Stroud next week. What do you think about that? They never adjusted, and they didn't necessarily get punished by it because eventually the run defense did catch up, but that is light personnel against the team that is running the ball down your throat.
I don't criticize it at all, man. If you can play the run, if you can fit the run with your nickel package, that's the key to being a top five defense in the NFL today. Because so much of what guys like Kyle Shanahan and what guys like Ben Johnson in Detroit, what they want to do is they want to force you to get into base because all of their play action, their crossers, all of that stuff's built on manipulating linebackers who can't cover all sure. of that. So if you can stay in nickel all game, and if you can stay out of dime all game, even if you can just stay in nickel, and you can still fit the run, it's huge. And so, yeah, there were those two drives, but even in those two drives, like I didn't feel like the absence of a third linebacker was the problem. I felt like Tremaine Edmonds and missing some tackles and, you know, kind of biting too hard, but he settled down. You know, I was critical of Tremaine early on. He made a couple really good plays. There was that one play where I can't remember who it was he tackled, but I mean, it looked like a sure first down, and then Tremaine was just on screen out of nowhere and just stopped the runner dead. Like, it turned it into what looked like an easy first down at a fourth. And
incredible one. Play.
Huge. Like, push. It looked, I mean, reminded me of a...
It was an Urlacher play.
Yes. The way that he just, like, fucking warped onto the screen. I was like, where the fuck did he even come from? And then... no forward momentum whatsoever on the tackle.
He was covering the outside receiver on the other side of the field, and he chased him in man coverage all the way across the field and made that tackle. Just an incredible play. Well, the other thing I would say, actually, your wife made a great point, which was the Bears defense didn't really get a break, and the ball was getting run down their throat, nickel and dimed. It was a very, I guess, smash mouth kind of football style the Titans were playing, and their offense was going three and out quickly, and then they were back on the field getting ground out again, and it felt like a lot of pressure was being put on them. By the time we went down 17-0, it was like 26 plays by the Titans to like six, I think, by the Bears. It was just brutal.
Which, to be fair, not all of that was on the Bears offense. Some of that was on Velus Jones.
That's true. What are we?
Well,
do we want to get about Velus? Should we do that before we transfer over to the offense? Or,
well, let's just wait just 1 second there. Yeah, we'll do special teams in the middle. But I was going to finish my point though about the nickel. Like, it does.
Okay.
Last year, when the defense made a huge transformation from a historically bad unit to like a top 10 one in the second half, most people pointed that to the Montez Sweat trade, and that's true. He was huge. The other part was Kyler Gordon, you know, missed the first month and then came in, and I think it took him a little bit to get up to speed, but Kyler Gordon really is so key to everything they want to do. He's their top blitzer. He is he fits the run so well. He is a good cover corner as a nickel. And I thought he was one of the best players on the field yesterday too. I mean, so much of what the Titans were trying to do to try to get Will Levis. Like I said, he contested every layup. There were so many plays
where, like, calling him a nickel corner is it feels so wrong because he's playing the cash position or whatever you want to call it, whatever college you go to.
Yeah.
He's basically a third safety.
He's almost
slash linebacker.
Yeah, he's almost like the Lobo position that Brian Urlacher Lobo played. Yep.
The Lobo, the cash, the
paid 25 years ago at New Mexico when no one knew what the fuck to do with Urlacher. So yeah, I mean, that was a hell of a game from Kyler Gordon too. He's very key to everything they want to do. So I didn't question that they wanted to stay in nickel all game long. I think that makes sense for them. That's their best defense. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously they're just going to have to continue to fit the run as well as they did on all but two drives yesterday to do that. So we'll see if they can keep that up when they play better offensive lines. But yeah, if they can stay in that as well as they can, you know. And then, like I said, we have to hope. I didn't have a problem with Eberflus not blitzing very much yesterday because they were having so much success getting home with four. But you have to hope that, you know, there will be days at this defensive line. I'm not under any illusion that this is suddenly a top five defensive line. There will be days where that unit is not getting home, and then will Eberflus adjust faster than we are used to him adjusting in the past when he was having that problem? That still remains to be seen for me.
Yeah, I do think, like, early I noticed a couple of those Kyler blitzes. I noticed him running in there. It's just they were on run plays. They just ended up not being on a play where that would result in anything or you'd notice any pressure. And then, you know, I don't want to make excuses for him or anything, but I wonder if, like, oh, I've noticed that our guys are getting pressure regardless. You know, Daryl Taylor is wrecking this game. Javon started getting a push in the second half, and maybe they just thought, like, what's the point? Like, why blitz? Just hang back and let Levis give the game away, which he did. But yeah, we had a highlight on special teams. I think DeAndre Carter really availed himself in this game.
Really
he
good.
Looked great.
Well, and not to take anything away from Carter, the Bears actually were one of the few teams that looked like they managed to run a pretty successful play with that new kickoff setup on that really long return by Carter. If you look at it, it's almost like it's like a counter trap that they run on the kickoff return. So I thought that was really well designed.
Boy, they ran a lot of counter traps in this game. some of them not so successful, but yes, the kickoff one did work, didn't it?
Yeah. Anyways, yes, but one other thing to talk about on special teams before we transition into the offense. Velus Jones.
The ferret.
We have officially reached the point wherein not only did the Bears spend a third-round pick on a 25-year-old wide receiver who can't catch the ball or run routes, he is also now officially a kick returner who can't even return kicks. This isn't even a muffed punt, which he has done before, and which he didn't return punts in college. They're like, well, he was a kickoff returner, but not a punt returner. This is now the second of the goddamn new kickoffs that we have seen. He muffed one in the preseason, and
he
now
did.
He booted this one. Why is this man still? And I realized that I was literally just last episode. You know, we said, you know, he isn't really worse than most wide receiver sixes on rosters around the NFL. Him making the 53 man is not the worst crime in the world. That was too optimistic. I can't fucking believe
it was.
Was too optimistic. But Jesus Christ, man, we are well past saying you had one job. You have failed every job they have ever tried to give you.
Yeah.
And I am, for all that Ryan Poles has done this offseason and last offseason, he is just, every day that he keeps running this fucking pathetic excuse for, I mean, God, he's not even, who was the Bears kick returner?
The one I always talk about?
No, the one in 2014 that first replaced Devin. Used to be in Atlanta for a long time.
Oh, that's not a name I'm going to remember, but I know the guy you're talking about.
I once called him the direct-to-DVD sequel of Devin Hester. This is, I mean, Valus Jones isn't even that. He is like the weird Taiwanese like CGI animation thing that they do. He's like that version of Devin Hester.
Yeah.
Like he can't do anything right. I know. In fact, one of the two plays they ran him on offense this week, he managed to blow out Roma Dunze's knee, for God's sake. Mm-hmm.
That's like, right.
Everything like he touches turns to ass. Just get him off the team.
He can't be on this team anymore. Like, the fact that they haven't cut him, like, today is honestly distressing to me. I laughed my ass off when that happened, because I had literally thought about that fumble he did in the preseason on the kickoff, and I thought, well, the thing is, the guys are so far down the field now, it doesn't matter. Like, if you drop it at first, but you pick it up again, like he did in the preseason, like, you're fine. Because there's no way the ball is going to hit your hands and then somehow make it all the way to the 25-yard line for the other team to pick it up. And then instantly, Valus showed how he could do that. It fell through his hands, and he kicked it 20 yards ahead of him to a defender. It shouldn't be possible, but he did it.
Yeah,
I laughed my ass off. Like, I mean, you were very angry, and I was just like, "This is the funniest shit I have ever seen." I'm reserving my anger because Valus should not be on this team right now. You need to cut him.
Yeah, I called him a disastrous pick the other day, and someone got mad because I asked, disaster, really? And I was like, well, to be clear, I'm not saying he, like, disastrous for the total fortunes of the franchise. But if you are talking any pick and you are talking the range of outcomes for that pick, Valus has been disastrous. Like, we hated that pick the minute it was made. We said, you're talking a 24-year-old receiver with no history of production until his final year in the Tennessee offense, which is an affront to God, a Mickey Mouse nonsense offense built around gaining college hashes. It took him that long to produce in that anyway. He can't run routes. He can't return punts. You took this fucking kick returner. And the thing is, like, that would have been a waste of a pick. They would have been setting that fucking a top 75 pick on fire, even if he had turned out to be a great kick returner. He's not even that.
Yeah.
He's not.
He's just a complete liability.
There's literally, like, it's not even that he is nothing. He's been worse than nothing. He has cost them, or damn near cost them, multiple games now, despite only touching the ball 3 or 4 times. He just yeets the fucking thing to the other team.
Yeah, so
the guy's got more turnovers than Craig Krenzel, and he's not even a quarterback.
Kyle, scale of 1 to 10, how mad are you going to be when he's back there returning kicks against Houston?
I mean, I definitely don't know that I can even be mad. I'm just resigned to the, like, I think that was the last time I could bother to get angry at him. At this point, it's not on Valus, man. Whatever he does.
No, it's not.
Is conclusively on Flus and Poles that they keep letting this happen. Like,
I agree. Just, no more hate towards Valus, all right? Just, the fact that he's still getting paid is not his fault.
Just take Dear Ferret Boy out and, you know, just take him like Lenny. Just be like, we're going to go pet the ferrets, okay, Valus? We're gonna pet the ferrets, you know?
Take Valus to that back alley, all right? And give him to the ferret man.
Just take him out to the barn and you know, let him pet the ferrets. So, yeah.
This fucking guy. All right, well, We've put it off long enough. Offense had a shitty day, Kyle.
They did. So let's start with players that will be excluded from the kvetching that we are about to do. I want to single out, as always, personal favorite of this podcast. And I want history to remember, folks, that we were so fucking early on this train. Darnell Wright, you know, for a guy that I think is battling an injury. He looked like he was in pain. He was just fine. Darnell Wright was great. Probably the best offensive lineman that they had. I thought Braxton Jones looked pretty good. I have no concerns about our offensive tackle.
Tackles situation. Are solid.
The tackles are solid. that is kind of DJ Moore also excluded from any complaints here today. Yes. I thought he, you know, he needs more targets, but otherwise, DJ, you did good. You know, made some plays with the ball in his hands as he does. I think that about wraps up the positives on offense here.
I mean, again, what else did we do that would be 149 yards offensively, Kyle, for a full game?
And again, we'll still save Caleb for last here. Coleman Shelton, dear God. Now I'll say this, and I said I'd say this on
tough
the podcast.
Assignment.
I said I'd say this on the podcast. Travis at draft time was big on Tavondre Sweat. And we can't pretend that there weren't character concerns. He did get arrested for a DUI. There were some issues there, and who knows when that will pop up again. But as far as just what he does on the field, Travis was absolutely right. And that guy was a nightmare matchup, specifically for Coleman Shelton. Coleman Shelton is on the lighter side for a center. Tavondre Sweat is on the heavier side for a nose tackle. And yet, that big boy was grilling on the roof. He was fucking moving. That much weight should not move. He was like a super... I mean, he reminded me of our dude, Andrew Billings, with even more pass rush juice. Because I think Andrew Billings has a surprising amount of juice sometimes for a dude that size. Tavondre Sweat just absolutely demolished Coleman Shelton. And he also demolished Tevin Jenkins, which, you know, Tevin has had bad games before, but I usually, when Tevin has struggled, I have always felt like, he missed his block. He didn't, you know, sometimes Tevin, he gets a little too excited and he just goes after the guy in front of him. And, you'll see Tevin make some mental errors a lot, probably more than you'd like still at this stage of his career. But I have never, and sometimes he gets beat by speed too. I've seen that. This was the first game that I can ever truly remember someone lining up across from Tevin Jenkins and just kicking his ass. Just absolutely, just Tavondre Sweat just fucking beat his ass all day long. It was rough. I can't remember Tevin being manhandled by that. I would hope going forward, you know, we'll see the same old Tevin that we're used to, and this was just a blip and just a nightmare matchup. Everybody's got one. You know, Charles Tillman could never do shit versus Steve Smith. Like, everybody's got that one guy that Darrell Revis couldn't stop Stevie Johnson. There's always that one guy that's just your worst matchup. Olin Krutz couldn't really do much against BJ Raji. There's always that one dude. So I'm hoping for Tev, that was just a bad day at the office and a bad matchup. I thought Tavondre Sweat just looked like a revelation. But yeah, there's no way to sugarcoat it. Tevin and Coleman Shelton just got their asses beat, just straight up.
I mean, you've been selling on Tavondre Sweat all day, and I just keep saying what I said last week on the pod. I can envision the Bears losing this game. There is one specific way they will lose this game, and it's because the worst matchup going into this game was the interior of the Titans' defensive line, specifically Jeffrey Simmons, against the weakest link on this Bears team, which is our interior offensive line. And that just kind of bore itself out. Not in the way we expected, because despite a very bad miss block early from Nate Davis, when he came back in for Ryan Bates, he actually performed very well. Bates did okay. Nate Davis was a lot better after he got benched.
Yeah, I thought Davis, the reason he got benched was fair. That ugly Caleb Williams sack. Yep. If you watch the tape, it's pretty clear that for as rough of a day at the office as Coleman Shelton had, he passes off his guy to Nate Davis. The whole line's blocking down to the left. Nate Davis does not get the memo on that play for whatever reason, lets the guy right through, blows up the play. So I understand the coaching staff temporarily benching him, being mad at him for that mental mistake. But otherwise, he handled his matchup okay. I thought he had a couple really nice blocks against Simmons. I thought Nate Davis, that was one of his better games that he's played. Overall, just beyond that one big mental mistake, Darnell Wright looked good. But yeah, it was Coleman Shelton and Tevin Jenkins that let us down, and it was those two mostly versus Tavondre Sweat, then versus Jeffrey Simmons. I think we probably expected Nate Davis versus Simmons to be the nightmare matchup. It ended up being those two versus Tavondre Sweat. You hope that's not, like, because, like, you know, we'll talk about Houston here in a little bit. Not to say that Houston doesn't have a good defense. They do. They have a good defensive line. It's just a different, it's built around edge rushers.
Yeah. It's a different structure.
So you
This is just, this is how matchups work in the NFL, right? We've seen it happen so many times to Great Bears defenses where Rodgers or Favre will look at the one weak link on the Bears defense and say, whatever, I'm just going to hammer it over and over and over until they break. It's just the same thing here. You know, if you can't stop Jeffrey Simmons, and I know that Eberflus was just driving this home all week. I know he didn't just forget that Jeffrey Simmons exists. I know he didn't just forget the second best defensive tackle in the NFL is out there now that Aaron Donald is retired. You know, like, they tried to stop him. And sometimes you just don't have the talent to do it. There's only so much you can do about a rampaging three technique when the three guys on your interior can't stop him. And he's freeing up Devondre Sweat to go one-on-one with somebody. And that proved just awful for Tev. And look, going into the game, if you told me the plan was, let's double Jeff Simmons, and then let's let Tevin Jenkins, our best guard, take on the rookie by himself. Yeah, I would have co-signed that.
Yeah.
And it just did not work for one play.
Well, and we said this before, you know, quick interior pass rush, or really just rush, because it affected the run game as well. Like, that will... I mean, nothing reduces an NFL offense to mush faster than that.
Yeah.
Because there is, you know, when you're struggling on the edges, you know, when you got bad tackle play, there's a schematic answer for that. You run between the A and B gaps, and you boot, you bootleg, you move the pocket, you do go to quick game. There's an answer for pressure off the edge, 100%. There's not an answer for getting your ass beat up the middle, because the game plan that Shane Waldron had, I think, definitely originally was going to revolve around a lot of boot action. They thought they were going to be able to run the ball. I think they thought Tennessee would blitz a lot more than they did. They'd hit some quick hitters. Tennessee ended up just rushing four, getting home with four, getting home quickly with four up the middle. And they played a lot of zone. They made Caleb Williams read it out. They made him nervous. They let the pressure get home. I know people were disappointed in Shane Waldron and what he had, but like, that, there's just not a lot of answers to that. If you can't run the ball and you're getting quick interior pass rush, there's just not an answer. If it's second and 13, the overwhelming truth is that unless your quarterback is Pat Mahomes, if you're starting every drive with second and 13, you're probably not going anywhere. The math is the math. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, I know people want to focus on Caleb Williams, and I'm not going to pretend he played well. We'll talk about Caleb here in just a second. But, like, there's not the game plan goes out the window when it's second and 13. And it was, like, second and 13 every goddamn drive, it felt like. It just goes out the window. Like, you're on your heels. You can't do any of the cute little tricky stuff. You can't do the play action stuff. It's just out the window at second and 13.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean... yeah, it's just this particular way for your offense to fail. It's just not fixable with scheme. You know, you can scheme around edge issues. You can scheme around the other team having a really great corner. You can scheme around the other team having big, fast, long linebackers. You can't scheme against the two dudes in the middle just running through the middle of your offensive line. There's just nothing you can do about that. It's a skill diff. And that's what happened here. There was just a huge skill difference between Jeffrey Simmons and Devondre Sweat and the interior of the Bears offensive line. Now, luckily, because we don't play Kansas City this year, this is the last time we have to play somebody on the interior the caliber of Jeff Simmons. So take a deep breath. We're not going to play a monster quite that horrifying the rest of the year. Hopefully the interior of the line can hold up against, you know, less all-world defensive tackles. But yeah, I'm itching to talk about Caleb. Should I go first, since my take is going to be shorter and more immediate, and then you can go into your hemming and hawing?
Sure, go for it.
All right. Kyle, Caleb sucked ass. He looked like utter shit. He unfortunately looked like he knew where to go with the ball and then just fucking missed. Badly, like, couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. Sometimes that's because he was off. Sometimes that's because he was doinking it off of defensive linemen's hands. by the end of the game, he looks like he was not looking downfield anymore to me. He just looked like he was going to run, like he wanted to run for it. Even on that last Bears drive where they were actually trying to move offensively, he had one snap where he had a ton of time and he wouldn't pull the trigger. The very next play, he didn't even look downfield. He just ran. Didn't pick up the first down, or he did pick up the first down on that play. But I was being very optimistic throughout the game. You'll recall, very optimistic about Caleb. He can turn around after this play, just go back out there, settle in, get better. Caleb got worse as this game went on, which is a very common Bears quarterback thing to do. And there is a deep-seated fear in me about that, but I'm pushing that away, just like I'm pushing away irrational optimism here. So what I'm going to say is, for this one game, our boy looked like utter ass. Like, there's no other way to slice it. He was awful.
I don't know. I didn't really feel like he was dropping his eyes. I was actually going to compliment on that. I didn't feel like he was dropping his eyes. He did have
for most of the game. He didn't. It was the very end, the last.
I know the scramble you're talking about, but I even felt they showed that replay during the broadcast, and I thought his eye. You watch him. He goes left, right. I saw him make two, three, but it was two man. It was the same kind of. It was the same kind of scramble he had in the preseason, where he quickly deduced. To me, that was a Marcus. He quickly deduced the smart move here is the scramble. It didn't look to me like just a tuck and run. I didn't really see any of those. And I don't know that I felt like he got worse as the game went along. Now, that's not to say he got better. I felt it was pretty much the same uneven performance the whole way through. But to me, I mean, there's a quote from Tolstoy and Anna Karenina where he's, you know, the first line.
Okay.
Where he says, you know, all happy families are alike. All unhappy families are unhappy in a different way or something like that. I can't remember the exact quote. I feel like, you know,
I have that book on my desk right over there.
When it comes to bad quarterbacking, you know, I'm not going to say that was not a bad game. The question
is, it sounds like you're about to.
Oh, no, it was a bad game. The question is, what was bad about it? And then how correctable do I believe the issue or issues were? And yeah, you already called this out. I have watched the All-22. I have checked with a couple people who are not Bears fans but are film watchers just to confirm that my bias is not playing here. I talked to four or five different guys here. They all said the same thing. His eyes were good. And that game looks a lot better anyways if Keenan Allen catches that touchdown pass and if Coleman Shelton does not get immediately destroyed by Ernest on the play after Keenan Allen drops the touchdown pass. Keenan Allen was again open for another touchdown pass. Caleb saw it immediately, pulled it immediately, was throwing it at exactly the right time, and Coleman Shelton got bulldozed by Ernest Jones, who the Rams gave away for no apparent reason, and got tipped because there was a guy literally 6 inches from Caleb when he released the ball. I really looked through it. There was only one pass, the one that ended up being doinked up in the air and caught by Roma Dunze, was the only play that I thought he made the wrong decision about where to go with the ball. That to me is a sign that, like, if the processing's there, and I also didn't even feel like he was particularly late on anything either.
No, a little too early. I wouldn't say so.
A little too early on a couple, but my fear was, watching it live, it did look very confused. He did look pretty jittery. My fear was I was going to pull up the tape and I was going to see the Justin Fields or the Zach Wilson, where you look and it's like, oh, fuck, man. That guy was there. That guy was there. That guy was there. I didn't see that. There weren't a lot of turndowns. It was a very good game plan by the Titans. And I will say, I think the Titans almost had a coaching advantage on both sides of the ball, really, going to this game in that they were brand new schemes on both sides of the ball. No one had ever really seen a game where Brian Callahan was the play caller before. Zach Taylor calls the plays in Cincinnati. So, you know, you can guess based on what Cincinnati likes to run. But at the same time, you know, we know from Luke Getsy, just because a guy was on some dude's staff doesn't mean you can just automatically expect the same playbook.
Yeah.
And same with, I forget who the Titans defense coordinator's name is, but he was on Mike McDonald's staff last year in Baltimore. But no one quite, you know, you don't quite know. Mike McDonald was not the defensive coordinator in Baltimore that long before he got a head coaching job. So there's not a whole lot of film on what Mike Macdonald likes to do, let alone his assistant. So I definitely felt like the Bears' offensive game plan, A, was not prepared for what Tennessee ended up actually doing. Like I said, I think they were expecting a much more blitz-heavy approach, which is why I think they repped the blitzes all summer long in camp. And I think, obviously, the quick interior penetration all up and down the offensive line destroyed everything else they wanted to do. But yeah, Caleb's eyes were in the right spot. I didn't feel like he was late on anything. I didn't feel like there were turndowns. Obviously, the accuracy was just inexcusably terrible. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that like we can survive him being that inaccurate. But it's one of those things. It's one of those things where it's like, I mean, there's two possibilities here. Either the kid that was one of the most accurate college quarterbacks of all time, and who has been praised for his accuracy all throughout camp, either that kid is going fucking Rick Ankiel in an NFL game and has the yips, or it was his first career start. He was racing a little too fast. He put a little too much mustard on really about four or five throws in when you look back on it. Because there were four or five, he was 14 to 29. I think there, I counted about four that were overthrows. There were probably three that were batted passes. There were two drops in there. Keenan dropped a touchdown. Odunze dropped what was a pretty good pass. And then there were a handful of throwaways in there. And I thought the throwaways were all smart throwaways. I was the main thing I will praise the kid for. I don't think he took any more sacks than he was going to take no matter what. They were both sacks that I didn't feel were on him in that it was a sack. Now, the first sack that he took, it was on him. That it was a sack that lost 19 yards instead of a sack that lost 5 yards. Like, it's 100% Nate Davis's fact that that blocker came through completely free. But the veteran move there is to just do the Tom Brady or the Peyton Manning where you just immediately go into the fetal position and just accept fate. Caleb didn't do that. He turned a 5 yard loss that would have kept them in field goal range. I think it would have made it what, like 3rd and 9? It was like 2nd and 4 when they snapped the ball. You know, he took what would have been 3rd and 9 in field goal range and he made it into a punt. Can't forgive that part of it. But again, it was not a Justin Fields sack where you look at the play and you say, well, if he'd just done this, that's not a sack. Like he was in the tackle box. He couldn't just throw it away. It would have been grounding. But if he had just known when to let the play die, it would have stayed a much more manageable situation. The second sack, I mean, we need to talk about Chris Morgan and why this offensive line can never fucking pick up a stunt. And it's scaring me, especially going into a matchup with Houston, because D'Amico Ryans is a stunt god. Houston has a lot of great stunt packages, and the Bears never seem to pick those up.
I'm going to talk about that here in a little bit.
The second sack, again, not on Caleb at all, and he didn't make that one worse. He just went down like he knew. So I didn't think he created any more sacks than were already going to happen just because of the way things played out. He did make one sack worse than it had to be. His eyes were in the right place. So like I said, the only thing that
No turnovers.
No turnovers.
That is big.
No turnovers. Yeah, I mean, it was a bad day on offense, but what we talked about with Caleb, where we talk about with Justin Fields all the time, you just can't make a bad play into a disaster. And Caleb avoided that. There was one play, but for the vast majority, he was like, fuck it. Okay. All right. Let's just throw this one away and move on. There are three or four throws he would like to have back. I think we would have all walked away saying, hey, for his debut, that wasn't too bad if he just hit that out and up to Keenan. I think if he hits that one deep ball, or hits the one to Carter, we walk away saying, yeah, he gave us that one big play. Otherwise, he didn't turn it over. He kept the stat sheet clean. Bears dub. It's a rookie. What do you want? So I'm not going to say it wasn't bad. I didn't think watching the film, it was bad in a way that concerns me long term. I think he's going to settle down. And I think the Caleb Williams accuracy that he showed over 1,200 college dropbacks and through camp is going to make its appearance here in an NFL game soon. I think he was very much, I think the surprise, the speed of the NFL game is just so hard to prepare for until you're in that situation. And he was just throwing fastballs when he needed to throw some changeups. I have to believe that that's correctable, just because, I mean, it's not even something that we considered among the range of possibilities for how this Caleb, like, I think you and I both would have been less surprised if someone had said, well, Caleb Williams is going to throw for 300 yards week one, but he's going to take 7 sacks. I think we would have been less surprised by that than to have someone say, Caleb is just going to inexplicably sky mail 4 balls and throw for 92 yards. I think that would have
been new and unique ways to disappoint us, don't they?
Yeah. So it's one of those things no, I can't pretend it was good, and I can't pretend that it's okay if it keeps happening. I just don't logically, and I think it is really logical, I don't logically think that's going to keep happening, because I don't think this kid, there's nothing in this kid's college tape that would make you think he suddenly just forgot how to throw the football.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the thing that would be concerning going forward, which we talked about a little bit earlier today, is the tipped balls. We heard a lot about tipped balls in training camp. Like, ooh, yes. Jervon Dexter with a tip ball, DeMarcus with a tip ball. Like, oop, here's a tip. And it was like, wow, sounds like either Jervon Dexter is getting really good at batting passes, or there might be a problem. And man, Caleb came out here and he was throwing the ball into some defensive linemen's hands.
Yeah.
Now the one, like you said, the one where Coleman Shelton just got fucking obliterated, which is hilarious play, folks. If you can find that online, I would go watch it. I've never seen a center get thrown that hard that far before.
Yeah, it was incredible.
That one, I don't even think you want to count, but there were three others that were
on all of the ones that were tipped. None of them were in good pockets. Like, all of them, the problem was how quickly the pocket compressed on it. At the same time, they are tipped passes that Josh Allen does not have.
This is the NFL, right? Like, you aren't going to get your perfect pocket.
No,
like,
you're not going to get a
hope for that shit.
No, you're not going
to have to throw it. If you're clean, if you're not getting hit at the time, that pass should be good.
Yeah.
Like, that is just not something I care about.
He is a shorter quarterback. I think the thing about Caleb, though, and I thought even in this game, the pocket movement was already there. I didn't see.
He did a good job.
I didn't see anywhere he even really like leaked out the back of the pocket unnecessarily. There was that one on the first drive, I think it was, where he spun out to the left, almost like he did on the Adunze play against the Bengals. But it was 100% necessary. The pocket was squeezed. There was nowhere to step up to, and he spun out to the left. But I didn't see anywhere where he did the Bryce Young or the Justin Fields where he just leaks and drifts out the back of the pocket. That didn't happen one time. He stepped up and threw. I'm still pissed on – they had a really nice play design on the bootleg that was going to free up. I think it was Keenan for like a 30-yard gain on that bootleg, and Blossom whiffed on the block. And even on that play, Caleb steps up very nicely in the pocket. He was going to be a perfect play, and Blossom Game let the defender get his hand on Caleb and fucked that up. That was a real bummer. With the tip passes, I won't say that's not going to be a thing that happens to him going forward, but he's very similar height-wise to Baker Mayfield, and I was reading you the stats earlier, going back for as far as they track the batted passes leader. You know, Baker Mayfield has twice led the NFL in those since he came in to the league. Justin Herbert has twice led it. 1 year it was Joe Burrow, which is to say, it's not that it's not a problem, but it's given the names I just gave, it's obviously not a fatal problem. It's not a list of terrible quarterbacks. It's something that, you know, if you become a guy who can throw it 30, 40 times successfully, and I think Caleb will, one or two batted passes per game is not going to kill you. So I won't say it's not an issue, but there's not really an NFL quarterback for whom I would. And Russell Wilson obviously has had his share of batted passes over the years. And for 10 years, it was a pretty good thing to be Russell Wilson. Then it became a very bad thing very quickly. But we'll get there 10 years from now if we get there. But so again, was it a bad game? Yes. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, like, I was pleased with that. And obviously, if that weird accuracy keeps happening, I'll throw the panic button pretty quick, because 1 week jitters, it's excusable.
If this is the problem next week, that is terrifying.
Yeah, because
this goes from me jokingly saying Rick Ankiel to me starting to, like, realistically say Rick Ankiel. What happened?
Yeah, like that's where I'm like, okay, the Bears need to get the sports psychologist in there.
Yes.
They need to get him doing some meditation. Like, you got to slow down, son. Like, you got to just like.
Yeah. But, okay, so Kyle, I do want to say one thing that might mitigate this Caleb stuff. And we talked about it earlier today. I have been cooking this up for 2 years now. It has been stewing in my brain in annoyance. We talked about the preseason earlier today when we were chatting back and forth. And I have such a gripe with the way the preseason is handled now. I thought it while the preseason was going on, but I never ranted about it because I thought, I just don't know that it's worth it. I don't know if anybody else cares about this, but I feel like this first week of the NFL season has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that the preseason is borked right now. Yeah. Removing one game from the preseason has caused pure chaos. And the chaos that it has caused is no coach can agree on what the format of the preseason should be for their starters. How long should they play? Who should they play against? We used to have rules, Kyle. We used to have a system, all right? First preseason game, maybe you get a drive in your starters. Second preseason game, it's going to be like probably a quarter. Maybe you don't finish out the full quarter. Third preseason game, you're probably in there almost through the third quarter, right? It's almost like a full game, a whole run through with your guys.
Yeah, I mean, and then nobody takes the third preseason game like it's bullshit.
Goddamn right. Nobody takes the third preseason game like it's bullshit. Denny Green knew that, all right?
Yeah.
The problem we have now is not that there are three preseason games. It's that no coaching staff can agree with another coaching staff on who is going to play and for how long and who's going to see the ones and who's going to see the twos. And there used to be – coaches used to talk. They used to say, I'm going to play my guys for this long. Would you please play your guys for this long? Or, hey, how long are you going to play your first unit? I want to know because I really only want my guys to have reps against the first unit. I want my second unit to be against the second unit. Things like that. This Bears preseason, nobody was matched up properly. Everybody the Bears played had a different fucking plan. They all had a different idea about how long their starters should be playing, how long the second string should be in. We scrimmaged the fucking Bengals. And then we go out there and Caleb is playing for a whole half against second and third stringers, gaining nothing. Right? It's just, it's a mess. Nobody gets anything out of the preseason anymore. And what we saw in this week of the NFL, week one, this is week four of the fucking preseason. We have every young quarterback struggling, utterly failing, frankly. It wasn't just Levis and Caleb Williams. Jaden Daniels didn't look good. He had better stats, but he was throwing absolutely tiny short passes. He looked like he was stuck in the preseason, right?
Yeah,
Bo Nix looked a horrible mess. We had like everybody except C.J. Stroud, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold. Yeah. Sam Darnold dominating. I know I said something about it. Maybe I'm going to be right. All right, maybe. But isn't it more likely that Darnold has just been through this more and he's just a veteran and he's experienced and everybody else is struggling?
Pretty much every quarterback who has played well so far in week one is a veteran with years of experience deciphering.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're onto something with the preseason. I also, like I said, I think that defenses, like I said, they're contesting all the layups now. People had this idea with Bo Nix. You know, I think they're picturing 4 or 5 years ago, you know, early Rams Jared Goff, where it seemed like Sean McVay schemed up so much that was wide open and uncontested for him. What Matt Nagy did with Trubisky in 2018. I think, you know, early Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, people still have this idea that you can just scheme up some easy stuff. You can baby these guys. You can bring them along slowly. But, like, defenses just aren't giving them that anymore. They have been rebuilt to counteract these offenses. And I think we're going to start to see offenses now counteract by running the damn ball. That's what Detroit, that's what was their answer. You know, the Rams linebackers are all 230 pounds and Detroit had a little bit of trouble throwing the ball there for a bit last night. And they were like, you know what? Fuck it. Bully ball.
Titans' solution was correct for the personnel the Bears had on the field.
Run the damn ball.
Just fucking hand the ball to the running back. We should win, and they just couldn't.
Yeah,
you know. But yeah, so, I mean, David Montgomery just won a game by himself.
I think it's a combination. I do. Teams have just very much decided that their goal in September nowadays is just to win ugly because they're too scared of losing anybody in meaningless games in preseason. And then, yeah, even if teams do treat one of the preseason games like a warm-up, it's usually game two at this point, and it's been 3 weeks by the time week one rolls around. And teams tend to dial down the intensity a little bit at the end of a grueling training camp. You know, their run-throughs before week one, even if they seem more focused, are they're less intense, usually less physically aggressive. I do think Caleb's struggles are a little bit worth putting in the context of this being the worst passing week one in NFL history since 2009. Like, it wasn't easy for anyone out there. I will like to collect my dollars from all of the Broncos fans that, again, fell for the Kenny Pickett preseason and Bo Nix. It ain't that easy, after all, to build the entire offense out of quick throws outside, is it, folks? Like,
that's right. I'm not going to claim victory on the thing, right? Because I think everybody was at a disadvantage this week.
Even as I am very low on Bo Nix, better days are ahead for him too.
Like, yes, obviously absolutely.
But again, it does go to show that the little preseason stuff you guys were all jerking off about means nothing. Like, you just stop overreacting to a guy having an 80% completion percentage in preseason. It doesn't mean anything. Do we roll into previewing the Texans?
Yeah.
I don't know that they're...
Let's preview the Texans a bit. I mean, so last week, how about this? Well, I mean, we can get a couple quick hitters out there. Last week, we said the fatal matchup potentially for the Bears was going to be this interior issue, right? And you kind of teased it. The Texans don't really have a strength on the interior of their defense. They have decent interior defensive linemen, but it's not their strength. Their strength is in their edge rushers. It's in Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter. Absolutely. The problem is what you said earlier. The Texans love to fucking stunt their defensive ends, which means that they already love to put their best players against our worst players. There is every chance that we are going to see Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson just waiting a second and then coming around to the middle. And we saw what happened to Coleman Shelton in this game. Man, he got bored and he just walked off and decided to double team somebody who didn't need it. And bam, massive sack. I hope that's not what happens here. I hope we're ready for the stunts. I'm not, I don't feel super good that we're going to be ready for them. I do wonder if Coleman does that again, if Ryan Bates doesn't move over, given how well Nate played later in that game. I wonder if we see Bates at center a bit. But I think the Bears also have a decent shot in this game, I guess I should say. If those stunts are scouted effectively, if the Bears are able to stop that, they understand where they're coming from. Relying on your tackles as a strength in this game to defend against their best players, that's a much better matchup for the Bears. So even though the Texans have a much better defense than the Titans, I think that'll bear itself out as the season goes on, even though right now I'm sure after this, Tennessee has the number one defense by DVOA in the league, giving up two offensive points. I think the Bears might have a better offensive showing against Houston.
Yeah, I actually don't know that I would say that I think the Texans have a better defense than the Titans. I think that's a good Titans group. I mean, L'Jarius Sneed is very good.
L'Jarius Sneed's a lockdown corner. And, the thing is, Caleb did fine beating him with DJ Moore. On a couple of nice completions.
I think Simmons and Sweat, that's a great interior duo. But yeah, I think Houston's going to be a very good defense. I do agree that in terms of just it being absolutely disastrous of a matchup, I think the Bears should match up a little better here. But yeah, no, I mean, I think, and I know we're kind of already in overreaction mode with Caleb. I don't want folks I don't think you can expect... I don't think it's fair to put this on him to expect him to go into Houston week two and expect him to win. The request for Caleb this week is obviously to not look horribly. If the throw is there, make it. And don't be, if the Bears lose, don't be the reason. Like, don't let us be sitting here looking back and saying, you know, Caleb really cost them that game. It's okay to not win it. I'm not expecting you to go out there and dominate and win it for them. yet, but like, don't be the reason they lose. Don't miss the layups that are there like you did this week. I'm sure they're still going to be fairly conservative with the game plan. I'm sure they're going to hope that they can run the ball a little better than they get against Tennessee. And I'm sure they're hoping that the secondary and the defense keeps them in this game and keeps it close. But yeah, you just want to see progress from Caleb. Obviously, you don't want to see him spraying throws. But I don't want to put too much on the kid either. Noticeable improvement. Let's trend line up and we'll go from there. We'll regroup after the game.
So offensively, that's kind of the most worrisome matchup, right? The Bears match up very well. We have strengths, our tackles against their strengths, their defensive ends. The way we lose is if those stunts just get through, if we can't track those guys down, and if Caleb doesn't see him coming and you know, can't flush the pocket at that time. However, I think the biggest skill difference matchup in this game by far is Montez Sweat versus Titus Howard. Titus Howard might be the worst right tackle in the NFL.
I was surprised that the Titans gave that dude an extension already.
It's insane. It is actually insane that they did.
I've not seen a lot from him to make me think that that was wise. Yeah. And the interior of that offensive line is weak as well. Obviously, they have one of the two best left tackles in the game. But yeah, yes, there will be matchups for them to exploit as well. Now, CJ Stroud is as good as any quarterback in the NFL already.
However,
at mitigating the rush. But he did take some sacks.
He took four sacks against a worse defensive line.
Worse defensive line? I mean, they got DeForest Buckner, and they've got Leatu Latu. Can we say that's a worse defensive? They got Grover
Stewart. That is a lot of love for Leatu Latu, but I understand how you feel about that. But our greatest strength on the defensive line is Montez Sweat, right? He is going to line up against Titus Howard in this game, right? That is such a massive difference. That is that might be a worse matchup than what we just saw with Jeffrey Simmons versus our interior.
I would be disappointed if this ended up a blowout, and I would be disappointed if Caleb Williams was the reason that they lost. Obviously, I'm not writing two starts and I'm not writing the kid off one way or the other. I know you'll be significantly harsher on him if he has a bad game than I will be, but you know, I just, again, make the throws that are there, play on time, do not be the reason that they lose. Just, you know, show some steady improvement from week one. Show me that you are calming down and we'll go from there. I do think that, you know, and then just survive this week. And then I think week three, week four, that's where you'd like to see them really start to settle in and start opening up the offense a little bit. You'd like to see Caleb really start to hit his stride in that, those, not really, you know, there are no easy games, but as you get into teams that are not currently expected to be necessarily division winners and playoff contenders.
Yeah, and I am just, you're very focused on Caleb. I understand why. I know a lot of Bears fans are. I saw a lot of Bears fans echoing your sentiment on social media, which came down to basically what's even the point if our quarterback isn't good? Why watch football? I might as well just stop forever, you know, even after a Bears win. I got to tell you guys, I'm on the opposite end of that spectrum. I'm like, either I'm watching Bears football or I'm not watching football at this point, right? I have learned to love the Bears victory, the chaos of the bullshit that just happened on Sunday, you know? So yes, I hope Caleb is better. I'm not going to project anything. I think he has a better matchup this week than he did last week. I don't think the middle of the offensive line is going to crumble in the same way. And I hope we pick up those stunts. But yeah, I mean, really the thing I'm looking forward to most is watching Sweat and Dexter go through the left side, not the left side.
Yeah,
their right side of the line, right? Sweat and Dexter will be on their left. I think they're going to put the wood to Stroud, and I'm interested in seeing how bad it can get for that Texans offense when one side of your line is actually falling apart the entire game.
Yeah, to be clear, I mean, I would like the hope, I think, you know, be patient with Caleb. I still believe this offense is going to be good, just capital G good, by November and December. the goal is for this defense to keep them afloat until then, because what you'd like is if the defense can keep them 500 or better in the early going, by the time Caleb really does hit his stride, that's where they take off and ascend in the second half, especially when with their division games all scheduled in the second half. You know, keep it afloat right now and then take off late. That's what you want to see. Basically, I hate to say it, what Green Bay did last year, you know, like, you want to just weather the storm early, let your defense keep you in games, let Caleb get his feet wet, and then as he figures it out, you ascend. And like I said, with
I feel like the problem with that is our schedule is so much harder the second half of the season than the first.
And I think that's true, but I think, like, I think the thing with Caleb is, if he's the guy that he's supposed to be, like, if it clicks for him, then the opponent's not going to matter. Like, once you have one of those guys, you can beat anybody, is the thing.
See, you're telling me on one hand, like, I'm not going to put too much on him right now. But then you're also like, but I'm going to put this shit on later in the season, buddy.
Well, no, like, I mean... No, well, no, I mean, it might not click for him this year. I'm fully admitting that. And that's not necessarily time to evacuate either. Like, there have been guys that take till year two to click. There have been guys that take till year three to click. I'm just saying, I think Bears fans are looking at the schedule and they're like, we can eke out a win here, we can eke out a win there. But I think the thing is, it might be a situation where, yeah, you're just trying to eke out wins all year long. The defense is leading the team. That might be what it is. The other possibility is, when this thing clicks for the offense, we're dealing with something we've never seen before. You might not have to eke out wins when you actually have a quarterback, guys. That's what's crazy about it. So you hope the defense keeps them in position to make a run while Caleb figures it out. And then you hope that Caleb does figure it out. And then you really truly can go on an actual honest-to-God run, not keep eking shit out, but, like, you know, Trevor Lawrence 2022 is what I'm kind of thinking with the Jaguars. You know, we're just in and barely hanging in games, barely losing games, and then Trevor Lawrence just kind of clicked and went on a dominant run all the way through winning a playoff game. That's kind of the model you're hoping for here, where, like, it's not one of those things where Caleb is just up and down all year long. You're hoping at some point he clicks, and then once he clicks, the sky's the limit.
Yeah. All right, well, should we wrap this up with a prediction? What do you think? What's the final score, Texans-Bears?
I'm going to say... I'll go Texans 27, Bears 20.
Yeah. I think it's going to be close in that way. I think it's going to be low scoring is all. So I'm going to say Texans 19, Bears 15. And it's just going to be bowling shoe ugly, Kyle. We're talking field goals on field goals.
Yeah, I want to know how you. I want to know how you think the 19 and the 15 get. But okay.
It is. I have seen the goddamn scoreboard say 19 points twice in one weekend now, and I am tired of it. If I have to watch Iowa or the Bears put up exactly 19 points, I will throw a fit.
Yeah.
That's it.
But again, as we said last week, there is one caveat, which is that, hey, it could just randomly click for Caleb this week. He could just fucking go off. And in which case, we will come in here after a surprising Bears upset, believing that we are like unto gods. So is that likely to happen? I don't know. But holy shit, wouldn't it be cool if it did? Couldn't we just have that?
I think there is absolutely a world here where this week was the last week of the preseason for all of these quarterbacks, and we're actually going to see real play this week for the first time.
It's entirely possible, yeah. Well, and again, it's you know, if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, but, like, there were design things in the Bears offense that and you can say this for almost any NFL game, but there were five or six plays. You changed the outcome just a little bit. You're not feeling down about that effort whatsoever. If Caleb hits that up and up, if he hits that deep ball to DeAndre Carter, just those two plays, even with everything else that happened, you're feeling pretty good about Caleb Williams today.
Yeah.
Like, if you just change a few of those things, like, there were open guys, there were opportunities on the field. So it depends on how long it takes to clean that up, but if they clean it up, it's there. There is talent here. You're not talking yourself into Dante Pettis and N'Keal Harry. Like, the guys are there. It's got to click. So, and now it might take 3-4 weeks to click, but it's not impossible. It could be this week. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, go Bears this weekend. Hopefully, we're 2-0 coming back in here next week, and I'll see you then.
Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.